Welcome to this episode of the Mind of the Escapist podcast. This is a podcast centered around film, video games, television, anime, and more. I am your host, Terrell. In today's episode, I'll be reviewing the latest MCU film, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Now, I haven't spoken about the MCU in general on this podcast yet, so I'm going to give you an overview of where I'm at with the MCU now. Of course, the MCU has been going on for a very long time at this point, and I, like many others, have been following it from the very beginning, from when Iron Man first released in 2008. Funnily enough, I've kind of been tracking the MCU ever since I started critiquing film. I believe the original Thor film was the first MCU film that I reviewed on my YouTube channel back then when I was 16. And I reviewed the first Captain America movie. I remember getting an early screening for that one back then in 2011. And I vividly remember tracking the release and the build-up towards the first Avengers film and doing trailer reactions and discussions on my YouTube channel back then, theorizing on what was going to happen in that first Avengers movie. So it's been a very long time that the MCU's been going on and that I've been very connected with it and within the fandom of it all. And, you know, I think this Ant-Man film is the 31st film in the franchise, which is kind of crazy, you know. 31 films in any franchise is humongous. I believe that's the highest number for any franchise, maybe aside from Godzilla or something. And to have 31 films come out in little over 15 years, that's quite a pace. And I think inevitably, there was going to be some burnout. Now, if you asked me a couple years ago, I would have told you, yeah, I'm fatigued. I've got that MCU fatigue. And it's not that I dislike superhero films or anything like that. I'm just fatigued with the MCU, the frequent output of content, and the direction that a lot of it's going in. Because for me, the MCU in general, after Endgame, it's kind of lost its way. It's kind of lost its direction. And the fact that they then started peppering in all these TV shows every few months, it just felt like a corporate product to me. And I'm the type of creative and the type of viewer that really appreciates the art of something and the creativity behind something and the vision. And I couldn't really see a vision behind the MCU going into Phase 4. And what I could see with almost every film and show was I could imagine the corporate board meetings about each individual product and how they were going to try and sell it to the consumer and how they were going to put X amount of things in this product to appeal to this amount of people. And it no longer felt like a passion built off of passion. It just felt like built off of a corporate entity trying to get as much money as possible in a short amount of time by just flooding the market with this IP that they have, which is very successful. And I think a key factor in accelerating my fatigue with the MCU definitely was the shows. And the expectation that everyone has the time to consume all this content within a couple months to be prepared for the next thing that's coming out that's connected to that content. And I think it just became exhausting. And from that point, I kind of checked out. So I've only seen a couple of the MCU shows all the way through. WandaVision I watched all the way through. And The Falcon and the Winter Soldier I watched all the way through. I don't think there's been another show since then, actually, that I've watched all the way through. I started Loki but didn't finish it, but I know the important details of what happened in that show. The What If cartoon I didn't bother watching. Moon Knight I started watching, got bored about halfway through, stopped watching. And I think the rest of them I haven't even bothered starting. I didn't bother with Hawkeye, Miss Marvel, and a lot of the other ones. So that's my stance on like the whole TV film aspect of the MCU. I think it's just become way too oversaturated, and quality over quantity doesn't seem to be in their thought process, and it's really affected my outlook on the MCU as a whole. So when these films come out now, I'm not really that excited for them. To be honest, I did enjoy Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness quite a lot, and that film has flaws, but I did enjoy that film a lot. Black Panther Wakanda Forever, I need to watch that again to form a concise opinion on it, because I think I was processing a lot when watching that for the first time, of course, because of the Chadwick situation. And I don't know if I soaked up the film to its full extent on that first viewing because of that. So I do need to see that again to form an opinion. But here we have this Ant-Man film. And this film is essentially centered around Scott Lang, his daughter Cassie, Hope, and Hank Pym. All going into, and Michelle Pfeiffer's character, I've already forgotten her name. All going into the quantum realm, basically accidentally being transported to the quantum realm and having to then deal with Kang and the Conqueror, played by Jonathan Majors, and like some different civilizations and rebellions within the Quantum Realm as they find a way to escape back out into the real world. Now, I thought the first act of this film was actually okay. I think the initial setup of the film outside of the Quantum Realm was entertaining, mildly funny in areas, and I thought it established things fairly nicely to start the film off. And it was actually surprisingly quick how fast they moved from that into the Quantum Realm stuff. Within the first 15 minutes of the film, it's kind of getting started. And even once they first go into the Quantum Realm, I felt like the film was still displaying some potential. The character and creature designs of the Quantum Realm felt inspired, although a little derivative of other things. It made me think of properties like John Carter of Mars, Dune, things like that, with some of the designs. But some of them did feel quite unique and quite fresh and cool looking. And I think the cast was a bit of a mixed bag, if I'm completely honest. I think the main cast, of course, Paul Rudd, he's always been great as Scott Lang and Ant-Man. He's a very likable presence, and he brings that quality to this film with relative ease. I think Michelle Pfeiffer is one of the unexpected standouts of the cast. The script actually gives her quite a lot to do compared to some of the other characters, and she has more of a bigger focus or bigger spotlight on her within the actual story, which was kind of surprising. But Michelle Pfeiffer definitely delivered with her performance and left a strong impression with what she was doing. Whereas Catherine Newton, who is a newcomer to the cast, she plays Cassie Lang, Scott's daughter. This is the third time they've cast that character. Of course, you had the little kid that played her in the first Ant-Man film. You had a different actress that portrayed her in Endgame, and then they've recast her again in this film. And I have to say, this is nothing personal against Catherine Newton. I've seen her in one or two other films. I saw her in this comedy called Blockers that came out like 5 years ago, and in Detective Pikachu. I don't think I've seen her in anything else, but she was fine in those from what I can remember. She wasn't, you know, bad or anything like that, but she did not leave much of an impression on me at all in this film. And I don't know if it's partially to do with her or the writing, maybe a mixture of both, but I wouldn't care if I never saw her again in another MCU film. That's how little of an impression she left. And I have a feeling that we will end up seeing her again in another Avengers film, because if they are going to eventually do like a young Avengers team up, she's probably going to be one of them. One issue I have with the MCU nowadays, which I think is just becoming very repetitive, is how like every young character they seem to come across is like an intellectual genius in some way. Like when this film starts, she's off working on some tech that's like communicating with the Quantum Realm. And it's one of those things where it's like, really? Like, why is every young character some sort of technical genius in this universe? It's just very repetitive. And I think it lessens the impact and the uniqueness of these younger characters that they're introducing when they all share similar traits like that. So unfortunately, yeah, she did not do much for me in this film. There's a bunch of side characters in this film that don't have much development or purpose. Some of them serve comedic relief. Some of them are actually okay in that regard. Others kind of just show up and have little moments within throughout the film, but you don't really know much about them or their backstory or what's really driving them. So you don't really care about them, but they're just there. It almost reminds me of when you have the need to sell toys related to an IP. So it's almost like some of these side characters that are introduced here are just for merch purposes, so they can sell pop figures and toys and things of other characters. That's what it feels like, because some of these characters really have no real purpose. You have Michael Douglas, of course, as Hank Pym as well. He was fine. It didn't seem like he was all that engaged in his performance, if that makes sense. Almost like he was just kind of there because he had to be. Didn't really seem like he was that locked in with the performance in a sense. Maybe that's just me overanalyzing it, but that's just what it felt like to me anyway. Now, the humor in this film isn't as egregious as I expected it to be. Some of it was mildly amusing, other parts of it didn't land. That's not a part of the film that I'd go out my way to heavily criticize, like I've done with other MCU films like Love and Thunder. So I'm actually quite thankful that it was bearable in that regard, because I felt Thor Love and Thunder was quite unbearable to sit through, especially with the type of humor it was trying to throw at you every 5 seconds and how poorly the strike rate of the humor was landing. But this film isn't actually like that, and judging from the trailers and the fact that it's Ant-Man and things like that and other factors, I did have a worry or a concern that this film might go overboard with the humor, but it actually didn't, which is quite a surprise for an MCU film nowadays, because a lot of them do try and lean into the humour quite heavily. What I will say, though, is this film is actually written by one of the writers of Rick and Morty, and there is an alien character in this film who I actually found, you know, kind of amusing, but I can completely understand if someone found them completely annoying. But that alien character is basically a character out of Rick and Morty, and some of the humour to do with that character feels like jokes you'd find in Rick and Morty. And I'm just pointing that out because this writer is actually the writer that's going to be handling the Kang Dynasty, which is quite a big deal to have this writer from Rick and Morty suddenly jump onto this film and then to go onto something as big as Kang Dynasty. So for all the issues I have with this film and for the issues that some people may have with this film, yeah, just bear in mind that the writer is actually writing Kang Dynasty. So some of these issues may prevail in the future. MODOK is in this film and he's mostly used for comic relief. And to be honest, I thought his inclusion in this film was fine. You probably could, but in some ways I think you probably couldn't get away with including him in this film anyway and playing it straight with no humour, because he looks ridiculous in live action. Like in this live action film, the way they've modelled him and the CGI they've used, it just looks stupid. And I think the moment you see his face in the film, that's immediately going to get some awkward laughs out of the audience. So I think at that point you have to just kind of play along with it and play it up for laughs, because of the way that they've kind of adapted him into this film. But once again, just like the humour itself, I don't think it was anything offensive, whereas I think some people may take more offence to his portrayal or think it's really, really bad. And you know what? If they do, I kind of understand it. But for me, I don't know. I just thought, okay, fine, this is how you're doing it, whatever. But once again, I think maybe that's maybe more how I'm interpreting it, because of the fatigue and the fact that I'm just burnt out on the MCU. So maybe I just care a little less about how these things are being done nowadays in the MCU. I'd say the visual effects for the most part are actually pretty good, which is quite a rare thing in the MCU these days. But what I will also say is the MCU is still having issues using the volume. Now, if you don't know what that is, the volume is that kind of 3D screen that they use, essentially. They started using it with the Mandalorian. It's almost like that 360 screen that they can use to put a visual image on and then have the actors act up against it. So instead of being like green screen per se, they're actually acting in front of like a projected image. I believe the Mandalorian was the first project to properly use it, and they've been using it in the MCU a lot. Another film that's used it recently is The Batman. And I think The Batman actually used it really well. Like some of the best utilization of that technology that I've seen is in The Batman, in terms of how the backgrounds just flawlessly blend in with the foreground and kind of create this kind of world that feels inhabitable. Whereas what I would say with the MCU and how they've been using it, and it's still an issue in this film here, is it's very noticeable when it's being used. There's some scenes in this film where the actors literally look like they're stood against a 2D backdrop and there's no real depth to the shot. So it's just so clear to see that they're stood in front of a screen that's projecting the background behind them. And whenever that happens, it takes me out of the scene because it's just very distracting. And a company, you know, a corporation the size of Disney, with the amount of money they have and the amount of, you know, accessibility to everything that they have, that type of issue just shouldn't be happening with Disney. If it's a more lower budget company and lower budget film, then I'd understand. But with all the money that Disney pumps into these films, it should look a lot better than it does. So that is something that definitely stood out. And that was a key issue with the Thor film, the most recent Thor film as well. And it's still a prevalent issue here. Now, narrative wise, this story is kind of meh. It's a pretty weak story, if I'm honest. And it's not really that engaging either. And there's a lot of exposition towards the middle of this film. There's like an exposition scene that must have lasted at least 10 minutes, maybe even pushing 15 to 20 minutes long. Just one whole big exposition scene where you get like these flashbacks. What it was showing in those flashbacks should have been really engaging and really interesting, but it kind of wasn't. And I feel like it was at that point, the film was kind of starting to slowly derail before then, but at that point of the exposition I feel like the film started to go off the rails and I became a little bored. And You know when there's just a lot happening on screen, but you just feel disconnected from it all and that none of it is compelling you? That's kind of how I felt, and it was a shame because there's certain characters in this film that I was intrigued to see and that I thought would leave like a big, big impression on me and make me really excited for the future of Marvel. But even their inclusion in this film didn't really do that, which is a shame. And of course, I'm talking about Jonathan Majors as Kang. And what I'll say is I came to the realization when watching Ant-Man Quantumania that even Jonathan Majors' portrayal of Kang won't be enough to ignite much of an interest in the upcoming MCU films for me. Simply because his portrayal, as great as it may be, means nothing if they still bury him under an aggressively mediocre and boring film. And that's what they did here. It felt like that performance from Jonathan Majors was fighting to get to the surface above all the mediocre stuff that's going on in this film. And they were constantly piling onto him to try and almost bring his performance down. Like, because even though I like the character and what he was doing in this film, I didn't walk out of the film excited or even that, you know, overwhelmingly positive about the character itself. And I think it's just because the film that surrounded him was so bland that it just really hampered his performance in the process as well. His film did a tremendous disservice to Jonathan Majors and his portrayal of Kang. There's flashes of brilliance within there, but like I said, everything around him just felt so half-baked. It was like the film itself was ruining his work, which is a great shame. And there's things they do with his character in this film that just don't make sense. Like, Kang is supposed to be very powerful and very threatening. They're trying to introduce him as the next big bad for the MCU. Yet they have him in scenes where he's struggling against some characters that he just shouldn't be struggling against, and it completely undercuts his power level. Because you've got a character here that's talking about having, you know, how he's killed other Avengers in other timelines. And then he's coming up against certain things in this film and they're giving him trouble. And it's like, this should be a breeze for you based on your reputation. But, and I think that's just inherently a weird thing of having Kang come up against Ant-Man. You know, having him have his introduction in the Ant-Man film, I think is a little weird. And another thing that was a little disappointing is a lot of the marketing materials for this film showcase the majority of Kang's key sequences. So if you've seen a few of the trailers, maybe the odd clip that's landed on the internet, you've pretty much seen all of the key scenes with Kang. And there isn't much left for the film itself, so that was a shame. I do think the future of the MCU, you know, I said this before the film came out and I still believe it now. I think the future of the MCU is literally going to be on Jonathan Majors' back. And it's going to be down to him to kind of carry it from here. And he definitely did a lot of carrying in this film, but I feel like the weight was so surmountable in this film that he couldn't carry it all. And I don't want to say he fell under the weight or collapsed under the weight, because that makes it sound like he did a bad job. He didn't do a bad job at all. But the extent of how mediocre and dull this film ends up becoming was just a lot to bear upon him. And it's kind of it almost felt unfair to have him doing what he was doing performance-wise in this film. In the same way that what Christian Bale was doing in that Thor film was in like a film that just felt out of place. It's kind of similar with this, because he brought this kind of Shakespearean quality to Kang that I was really interested in. Like, whenever he spoke, you'd really engage with the words and his facial expressions and his mannerisms and the way he reacted to certain things. It was all very engaging. But it's just everything else around him just was not really working, which is a shame. But like I said, the one thing to take away from this film that's mildly exciting or positive or hopeful, whichever way you want to spin it, is that the MCU is about to become Jonathan Majors' playground. And hopefully, that can bring some good to the MCU and make things a little exciting again in future. But we'll have to see in that regard. Now, as for the third act of this film, I just have to ask a question. Why does most of the MCU films nowadays have to resort to an overblown third act battle with lots of characters and excessive visual effects? I find these type of climaxes disengaging now. Really disengaging. And after seeing something, I hate to bring this film up in this review, but I'm going to do it. After seeing something refreshing like The Way of Water and how that handles spectacle in a final act, blending it with emotion and great direction. After seeing something like that just a few months ago, these MCU climaxes feel even more subpar, and they really need to step their game up in that regard. And they don't need to be doing this every time. Like, we don't need, you know, an army of something fighting an army of something else and big explosions and all of this. Those type of climaxes don't need to happen all the time. There's a hand-to-hand battle in this film between Ant-Man and Kang, and it's very brief, but the film could have got rid of all the overblown action that was going on in the third act and just focused on a scene like that, and that would have been 10 times better than what they actually went with in the end, if they had just focused on that more intimate scene between those two characters and their dialogue and their battle and personal kind of confrontation with each other. That was the direction to go, in my opinion. Just focus on that. Would have been more impactful. Would have been more interesting. And more entertaining. But of course it's Marvel, so they got to have the whiz bang and all of that stuff going on around it. And yeah, it's just getting a bit tiring now. Because watching that third act of this film, there's no reason to care about anything that's occurring. No reason at all. Like I said, half of the battle is going on between these side characters that were literally introduced just so they could have a battle at the end. And it's just not engaging whatsoever, and it's not entertaining, and it's just very boring. And I don't know if it's an age thing with me. Maybe it's to do with that as well. I don't think it is, but like, back when I was 15, these things were much more entertaining when you just see kind of just explosions occurring and action here and there. But I don't even think there was that great of a choreography to the action or the set pieces. They didn't really feel like there was real action going on. It just felt like noise, visual noise and sonic noise, just explosions and visual effects. That's what it was, and it wasn't very engaging as a climax whatsoever. And the ending of the film itself didn't feel that satisfying either, which, you know, left me feeling a little sour by the time it ended. So this isn't the Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania isn't the worst MCU film. Is just an aggressively mediocre and boring one. One that did have kind of potential in the beginning, but then kind of fizzles out by the halfway point. One that's very heavy on the exposition. One that has a great villain in there somewhere, but they just pile on issues upon issues on top of that villain until the villain is basically buried within this movie. And it almost rubs off on the villain to make you feel like the villain was mediocre too, but he wasn't. Jonathan Majors wasn't mediocre at all. He was doing some interesting stuff here, and I'm still intrigued to see what he does in future. But like I said before, I don't think he can on his own save these films. Whereas before seeing this film, I thought he could. This film's kind of opened my eyes to the possibility that, you know what, if Marvel keep putting this mediocre writing and mediocre characters and storyline and, you know, set pieces around this character, it's still gonna ruin the experience of this character no matter how good Jonathan Majors is. And that's quite an alarming thing for me, because my interest in this whole franchise now is kind of riding on Jonathan Majors. But now that I think that he might not even be able to withstand the weight of everything else around him if it's not good, that's a problem. But we'll only see in the future with future installments what happens there, and if Marvel can improve. But I don't think Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania is worth going out to the cinema to watch. And evidently I think a lot of people think the same, because surprisingly enough, the cinema was fairly empty. You know, I went to watch it on a Saturday night, and Saturday night on opening weekend for an MCU film is usually sold out or close to selling out, and this was fairly empty. So I think a lot of people have that same perception, and I think because they put the films on Disney Plus fairly quickly nowadays, I think a lot of people probably think they're just going to wait out and watch this on Disney Plus, which is exactly what I'm going to tell you to do. If you haven't seen it already, just wait till Disney Plus, if you've got a Disney Plus subscription, and watch it on there. You're not missing out on much. Even in terms of the grander story or theme of the MCU and the direction it's going in, this film doesn't actually do as much for that grander story as I thought it might have been. Because this film was being poised as such an important chapter in the MCU, the start of Phase 5 and how it's going to feed into these future films and be such an important point in the narrative. And now that I've seen it, no, that narrative isn't as strong or important as they were making it out to be. So you can wait a month or two and watch it on Disney Plus and you'll be fine. And even if someone spoils, I don't even feel like there's much to spoil in this film. That's how narratively thin it actually is. Is I don't think you could tell someone who hasn't seen the film what happens in it, and I don't even think much of it would be a spoiler. Which, that says a lot in itself. But yeah, that's my thoughts on Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. I'll speak to you guys in the next episode. Thank you for listening.